Welcome, welcome. Come in and take a seat. Can I get you a drink? Room for the night? Perhaps you're here for a story, or maybe some enlightenment for adventures to come. Fear not, for you have come to the right place. Welcome to the Bardic Inspiration.
On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Faithful Steed, the Pegasus, and the Unicorn. Pegasus originate from Greek mythology. They are the winged divine stallions, often depicted with Perseus when he slayed Medusa.
Not to be confused with the creature Medusa, or Gorgons.
Well, in Greek mythology, Gorgon and Medusa are the same,
whereas right.
In later editions of D&D, they're actually separate. A Gorgon in D&D is essentially the brass bull.
Right.
That's correct.
Whereas, yeah, anyways. It's often seen a lot in Greek mythology, actually.
Right.
As, you know, the deity's chosen, you know, savior, or steed, rather.
That's correct.
Well, from what I kind of did some minor research, I found out that Poseidon, one of his many titles was the horse god. He sired them. He created these creatures. And then, funny enough that you mentioned Gorgon, or Medusa, rather, she was kind of the thing that gave them form. Like, he created them, but then she basically mared them. But they're all always seen as, like, the white stallion with feathery wings, bringing down, you know, controlling the weather of thunder and lightning.
Can they be different colors? Or different sizes?
As far as Greek mythology, there's no real depiction of that.
No, but I mean, like, as far as the in-game creature.
I mean, they could. Everyone's
DM's choice.
Yeah, it's everyone's DM's choice, but more often than not, they are seen
as... I want a black Pegasus.
I'll look into that.
Just go over to it and just smear a whole bunch of berries all over it.
Nice.
You are black now.
Just make sure you're proficient with disguise kits first.
Disguise kits. Make sure you can actually keep up with its unbelievably fast speed.
They have a speed of 90, don't they?
In 5e,
yes.
Yeah. Outmatches a dragon, even, so.
Yeah, they are very, very quick. Even on land, they run at 60.
Yeah.
Like, just galloping. Yeah. So, they're quick, and for good reason. They are not very combative. They're
the agile...
Yeah, they're...
Swoop in and swoop out kind of creature.
Yeah, but before we get into that, I mean, as far as I could find, they were added into the original Monster Manual by Gary Gygax. Both them and the unicorns. Initially, their first appearance within the D&D lore is within the D&D White Boxed set, the 1974 to 1976 kind of run, but then were later produced in an actual Monster Manual with first edition AD&D, produced by TSR. As far as where they come from, and
they're usually from the airplane, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, from the airplane. Or the elemental plane of air. Dan, how big would you say a Pegasus is?
I'm gonna go with large.
Well,
they are large creatures. They are rather big. They're about 6 feet high, and they weigh a whopping 1,500 pounds, and they have a wingspan of 20 feet.
That is a large wingspan.
I was like, a wingspan of 20 centimeters.
Now, who figured out that they birth from eggs? I've never even thought
all right.
That was capable.
So it's the great debate.
Of course it is a myth.
We're going to settle it now. So in old lore, they were birthed from eggs. Nowadays in 5e, it's live births. So ultimately, it's your choice to make of how you want your Pegasi to be birthed.
Find it much
However,
with eggs.
What do we say?
I do kind of like the idea because when they do birth their young, it's often in high, out-of-reach places. I do like the idea that it's very much like a bird where eggs, and they just keep coming back to the nest with food and until they are ready to leave the nest kind of idea.
Yeah, or we could go the Hercules route and he's formed from a
cloud.
Cloud.
Well, yeah.
And it's by Zeus, nonetheless.
That's
the god of the skies.
That's where you can't really go with Disney because
of course Disney interpretations are always...
Yeah, a little off. I mean, it's Poseidon, not Zeus. I mean, they're brothers, so, I mean, they both have that power.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, I still like the idea of, you know, the deities from D&D. It's like, pff, 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 cloud, oh, a little bit of wings here, a little bit of a mane, and pff, there you go. And they send him off into the prime material plane to aid said adventurer, who was somewhat loyal for the most part until his deathbed. And then... Yeah.
I also like the idea of eggs, just because if you, like, were to go on a quest to save the Pegasus eggs, and then it, like, births while you're saving the egg, and it imprints on you, like in Jurassic Park,
ooh,
and now you have your loyal and valiant steed. Granted, it's a small child, but it's your loyal, valiant steed.
And loyal they are. They are, when they imprint, there's a thing, actually, to train a Pegasi for a mount. They suggest to do it young because although they are intelligent and they are, you know, more of a wild creature, they still can be trained.
All right, to switch the steeds, let's go into unicorns.
Switching the steeds. the Pegasus to the unicorn, the one that doesn't fly.
Yes.
But is way more awesome.
They have the layer effects. They have everything that's...
That's a layer, but if you want to use it as a steed, it's not going to follow it.
Well, I mean, let's get a little more into the lore, then we can delve into that valor.
Yeah, you settle down, valor boys.
Unicorns, although were mentioned by the Greeks in their literature, they weren't really created by, like, as far as deities or whatnot. I mean, they have been religious settings as far as Christian. They are mentioned a couple times in the Bible. Yeah. Like one of them lays his head on the Virgin Mary's lap, et cetera, and so forth.
Yes.
But as far as the Greeks found out, they believed that unicorns were real life creatures and that they originated from India, like the India wilds, just the plains of India. How they summarize that they went extinct or an all, I don't know. I mean, it's always depicted as a beast with a large pointed spiraling horn. Approximately 2 feet. But I mean, it continues on as far as like European lore. They're always depicted as white, like either horses or sometimes goats with long horn, cloven hooves, you know. The very stereotypical image of a steed with a horn. And in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, they are often seen as symbols of purity and grace, in which only virgins could capture these creatures, virgin maidens, maiden warriors even. The Middle Age and Renaissance era, they always thought that the horn was kind of a cure-all, like you could, you know,
grind it up and use it as
not necessarily, just touch it.
Oh,
they thought that if you were touched with a unicorn's horn, it would cure you of poison, it would cure you of any disease you had, it would bring you back to good health. It was actually to the point where they were hunting narwhals and selling the horns of narwhals as quote-unquote unicorn horns. Great business.
Close enough.
It was the scam of the century.
And the unicorn of the sea.
Essentially, it doesn't really specify that it has to be horse. So, I mean, essentially, they are
unicorns. Oh, that's true. It's kind of like the were-creature thing. It's like, it could be any type of creature, just so long as it's one horn.
It's got to be a beast with a singular long horn that's spiraled, ivory often.
So... technically, a narwhal is a unicorn.
That's what I'm saying. As far as the Middle Ages were concerned, or if you want to talk about it now, as far as nowadays, they are essentially unicorns of the sea. But, I mean, that's more of mythos. As far as Dungeons & Dragons, it's a little bit different. More often, they're described as horses.
Well, they're horse-like. They're still celestials, and... they typically, unlike Pegasi, where we were discussing that they're birthed, unicorns are actually just created by the gods and live on the celestial planes and then eventually make their way to the material plane or our world or whatever you're using. And they're typically sent either as guardians, like to protect a sacred area or a place that's very holy, or they could be sent to aid a warrior on their quest or whatever.
Right, and they, unlike the Pegasi, can speak telepathically.
Correct.
Different languages.
Smart horse.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they definitely have some more horse. More intelligence. I mean, and they're not too much smaller or larger than a Pegasi either. I mean, it's
or a regular horse in them.
Yeah, they grow to about 8 feet in length. You know, stand about 5 feet high.
They're usually depicted as the golden mane and everything. So white coat and golden mane.
Males often have the goat-like beard, and then all unicorns have the cloven hooves.
Right.
And then something else I found is females often are seen as thinner and like more gracefully in appearance, like smaller and thinner.
It's kind of weird the fact that if they're made by the gods that they even have two genders. You think it would just be like one non-specific.
That's true. I can't help but to think about the last unicorn too. You go from the Middle Ages, they thought they came from India, they were thought to be a normal beast, and then they just disappeared. Just that train of thought kind of led me to The Last Unicorn for some reason, which, by the way, is a great movie for kids.
Possibly use a unicorn's horn as a wand?
I would allow it, but cool. I can guarantee you that
probably wouldn't have the healing property.
Oh, no, it would. I would allow all the same properties.
Oh.
But I guarantee you that this celestial being that is sensed to be guarding something is definitely going to have a higher up that's going to be a little pissed you got that unicorn horn. So, I mean, talking about how they are guardians, let's kind of get more into, you know, where they reside, where you're more likely to find them, how they would respond to a party of adventurers or everything. Both are seen as chaotic good and kind of creatures that they're there for the ultimate good, but, you know, damned civilization's laws, they're going to follow their own rulings or their own...
Oh, okay. I guess that's why they're called chaotic then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the unicorns are lawful, but the Pegasi are chaotic.
Not necessarily. As far as 5e, they are considered lawful good.
Okay.
But as far as, like, it's kind of the idea, and not to get too far into alignment, it's the idea of, like, okay, well, your view versus their own view.
Right.
Yeah, they view themselves as lawful good, but you kind of view them as chaotic good because they won't let you into their forest unless you, you know, pass a test or whatever. But, I mean, they're both very forest-heavy kind of creatures. They live in a temperate forest. They, you know, the only reason the Pegasi leave the forest is to lay their young into high, out of reach, hard to get to places. Whereas unicorns kind of guard, not necessarily always forest, but they do reside deep in forest. They guard the forest and the fey within it. And I would say argumentatively that you would find them more likely in the Feywild as far as unicorns are concerned.
Well, I mean, and I'll mention this now, in Forgotten Realms, there is a goddess named Maliki who is a unicorn. And it is a goddess that is worshipped by Driss Duarden of all people as well.
I wouldn't say that she's a unicorn, whereas her mascot, for lack of a better term right now, would be that of a unicorn. I mean, her holy symbol is a unicorn's head, like a silhouette.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say that she is a unicorn, whereas it's more like she does take a lot of the same personality or a lot of the same traits of, you know, guardian of the forest, of nature, etc., and the natural way of life. But she is, I wouldn't say that she is, but often does send, you know, the unicorns out as like a messenger or etc. And I mean, that's pretty much the only way to get a unicorn mount is to either go up and convince, like find one in a forest by sheer luck and convince it, or it's literally sent to you by the deities so that you are seen as this holy warrior.
Can a unicorn or a peccorn go dark?
Yes. I mean, anything can go evil with enough magic.
Well, I mean, as far as like their own intent, is it possible to like, just turn on their own will?
I would argue no in my campaign or my world. And as far as I would say Forgotten Realms, it's not a common thing to see. Like it might be, again, with that alignment, like it might be that idea of like, okay, well, it's viewing its protection of this forest as good. As the civilization is slowly encroaching on its forest, it wipes out the village. Well, it saw it as it's protecting its forest, where it kind of is that.
What happens if the forest is take it down, like if it's burnt to the ground and the unicorn's got nothing.
Funny story about that. I ran.
Story time.
I didn't run. I participated in my actually first campaign was a converted fourth edition into fifth edition campaign called War of the Burning Sky. And one of the forests was essentially cursed to forever be on fire. And it was due to a entity that was pinned at the bottom of a lake. After you defeated it with the weapon it was being held into the lake with, the forest slowly died of its fires. Like, it would all burn down and then slowly grow back up. A unicorn was originally the guardian of this forest, and it was actually upriver in a cave, and it was trying to take as many of the fae or the creatures that resided in the forest and kind of shelter them in this cave. And that's how we came upon it, is by sheer accident. We were trying to go, like, we didn't know which way to go, so we went up the river instead of down the river, and sure enough, we ran into a unicorn who was initially very aggressive
until they learned that our, very angry.
Well, it was more of a, I don't trust anyone anymore because of, you know, the curse, and it's constantly burning down and everything's evil here, and he's trying to do this with a little bit of good. It's
long story short, unicorns typically good but can get very easily pissed off.
Well, yeah, and then if you're playing an evil campaign, you got a really powerful wizard, you can turn it evil.
That's one way.
It literally turns black, like a
nightmare.
Almost. It's still a unicorn. It's black fur. Black fur. The cloven hooves still has the unicorn horn. I think, like, the way I would describe it is the unicorn horn is still white of ivory, but, like, the fur is evil. The eyes, instead of being like a fiery blue or amber kind of color, would be more of a dark, like, red or orange or yellow.
I got a couple questions. Just really quick, as a general for unicorns, they're mentioned as steeds. How often are they actually used as such?
I mean, so the two ways that I see that unicorns typically have their purpose, one that we've already been talking about, is they're sent to defend or protect an area and, like, the creatures within it kind of thing. So almost like celestial druids for that realm. The other way that they can be sent is to aid someone, like a holy quest. So quite literally, they're sent to be a mount or to be a healer.
Okay.
So as far as riding one, like we were saying, yes, pretty good call. Considering it is a horse-like creature that moves fast, it can heal you, and it can fight and defend itself.
Right.
Other cool thing about unicorns is they can also heal themselves in combat. Like, just naturally. They don't use, like, spells or anything like that. It's just a natural ability that they have. They can give a protective aura around their allies, so they can boost their AC and make them harder to hit. And then they can hit people with their hooves.
Paladin steeds.
Exactly.
Paladin steeds.
And they're really impressive fighters, too, because at least in 5e rules, a unicorn, like its attacks and everything, are treated as magical. So they can overcome, like, natural resistances from most creatures. They're dependable because they can also sense and detect evil around them. So if you are talking to or discussing with a very shady or evil creature, you'll know, because your unicorn can tell you that.
There's that, and then I'd like to think that their detect evil is a little wider, as far as, like, if they're guarding that forest, they can sense when evil steps into that forest. Yeah. And they know to, okay, I need to go and defend that. I mean, just the chance to see a unicorn in the wild is a gift or a blessing in its own right. We kind of talked a lot about unicorns. Pegasi are also great mounts. As we mentioned earlier, you know,
as long as you can catch them.
Yeah, if you can catch them, or if you can get one done, you know, capture one from birth, they make... You can train them.
Good luck hiking.
Yeah, or flying.
Or getting to the element plane.
Yeah. I mean, you could essentially get an adult Pegasi as your mount, which, you know, saves you trouble of training it.
Right.
It just takes a little more persuasion and as far as skill challenges, like animal handling or persuasion.
So in my campaign, we built a cubic gate that does it in reverse. Instead of taking the PCs to that plane, it brings the creatures from that plane to the material plane. So in one instance, it was given this cubic gate, which is the size of your hand, was given to Daniel's character, Cedric. You want to explain?
Okay, so cubic gate is basically a giant hand-sized die. You pull from the elemental plane, you don't know what you're going to get. We were in a canyon, and we had a few enemies on the other side, as well as a few allies. And so a desperate attempt to get some aid into crossing, I rolled the die to see what I'd get. And per luck of the draw or the die, I rolled elemental plane of air, and then I rolled and got Pegasi out of it, and I got two of them. And they served as faithful mounts for that whole minute.
Yep, for a whole minute.
But it was freaking awesome. The ability to just zip around the battlefield without, you know, having to move myself and still being able to assist my allies on the other side. That was an awesome experience.
But yeah, that was my instance and my encounter with Pegasus. But has anyone else had any?
I had one instance where I was in a game where the party mostly consisted of characters of questionable alignments, not necessarily evil, but like a lot of chaotic neutrals. And we only had like one, I think it was neutral good if I remember correctly, so we only had one neutral good character. I remember that this one character, like, he always felt off-placed by everyone else, because his character, being the good one, was always trying to be the voice of reason, but it wouldn't really work or anything, because we had too many characters with bigger personalities. And then one day we were going, I believe we were crossing a plains, if I remember correctly, and we saw a Pegasus being attacked by two griffins. We were riding our horses, and so the griffins got kind of distracted and started going for our horses as well as this Pegasus. And essentially, our good aligned companion, he ended up earning the trust of this Pegasus, and it became sort of his mount. And by extension, it became like almost a fixture for him, because he was like felt down whenever it was like, oh, here are all these other guys that I have that I'm traveling with that don't share my ideals or anything, but at least I have this loyal steed that shares my views of good. And so that was kind of like his character's like main bond by that point in the story.
Mm-hmm.
That was my Pegasus experience. Oh, because then our goal was, oh, what if we sell the Pegasus? And that wasn't going to fly. My character may have had his life threatened a time or two because of that.
So, kind of getting into it, how, I mean, you have your experience with the Pegasi. Mm-hmm. How would you guys run a unicorn?
I would probably take it as what we've kind of seen or talked about, a unicorn being trapped by, like, let's say, a band of hunters or something along those lines, and the PCs would have to release it or save it or something along those lines.
I would have more fun just having the unicorn bug the PCs because they're in a place that shouldn't be.
Here's a better idea. Pegasi are forest-bound creatures. So are unicorns. Right. You get a quest from said unicorn to evict, essentially, these Pegasi into either another forest or another area.
How? Why would that?
Unicorn.
They're disrupting. Unicorn. They're not fey. There's distrust between Pegasi and unicorn.
Especially,
like,
it, I mean,
it's just a random idea. I mean, it's a nice. I think it would be a nice little one shot.
Yeah.
Basically, you get a quest. You're traveling through a forest. You get a quest from a horse with a horn that stands up and just walks into your camp.
Yeah.
Says, can you guys remove these Pegasi from my forest? They're disrupting the natural cause, you know, the natural ways of life or whatever. They're causing too much of a disruption. Can you find them a better home or convince them to
party next door?
Yeah, essentially. Essentially, you're playing noise disturbance of the cops for the Pegasi. I don't know.
Yeah.
Random idea there.
I find it weird the fact that even if unicorns would have an issue with what the Pegasus are doing, it just seems kind of weird that the unicorn has such a problem with a similar kin.
No. What kind of things would you grant as a reward?
The reward could have magical items, maybe something that it's protecting, maybe a warrior that tried to take whatever it's protecting, you know, has a few looted items.
It confiscates weapons and
temporary boons or banes. I mean, they are celestials that would have that power to get.
Yeah, I think of it. That'd be kind of interesting. It's like there's a TSA of unicorns when you enter a forest. Must drop off weapons. Will be returned to you at the other end of it.
That would be hilarious. Let's go back to narwhals.
Oh, boy.
You know, unicorns of the sea. You're coast, you know, a mm-hmm. portside village or even on a ship. And now you've got narwhal unicorn.
Like it has the abilities of a unicorn, but the size of a narwhal.
But it's a narwhal, yeah. So instead of it just has a fly speed, but it's, you know, it's got the telepath, it's got the healing properties.
That's terrifying. And it grants interesting.
And it grants the or it requests of these
seafaring adventurers.
Seafaring adventures to, you know,
fight sharks.
The kraken, the marrow, sharks, you know, something.
Dragon turtle.
Can you evict this dragon turtle? It's eating all the reefs.
Yep. Like it.
That's perfect.
It's disrupting the cycle by eating too many reef sharks.
Gives me a bit of an idea for my campaign.
You could also use them against people if you have a party that's, say, made up of predominantly evil characters.
Yep. Yeah.
You could have like a group of holy knights chasing after them, riding their pegasi steeds, or you know,
be the ones trying.
You're the ones trying to get a unicorn.
A good aligned paladin army riding Pegasus versus a evil aligned paladins riding nightmares.
So on the subject earlier, you were talking about if like someone used a wand and made it with like a unicorn wand.
Right.
There is a section in 5e where they do discuss the idea that there are ways that you could actually craft weapons with unicorn horns.
Ooh, I want a sword or a dagger.
However, there comes a risk with it. They're very powerful weapons because they're literally imbued with divine energy. However, it comes at a cost. Kind of like what Daniel was saying earlier, is, you know, there were gods that sent these unicorns, and they're going to be a little upset about you coming in and killing their steeds. So, what usually happens is any person that was involved with the slaying of a unicorn, so you're the person that actually did it, you were the quest giver, you gave the people there a ride on your boat, whatever. If you were involved with getting this unicorn killed, you are more or less, I guess, cursed would be a good way to describe it, and you will be sent with some form of divine retribution, whether just a terrible string of bad luck, angels coming down to slay you. It can kind of vary.
What if you didn't kill it?
If you took part in its killing.
Oh, no, I mean, like, you were, like,
fighting. Oh, if you were unsuccessful?
No, if you were, like, fighting with the unicorn
on its side?
Yeah. Oh. And it died, and you just took the unicorn in honor of it. Took the horn.
You were responsible for it dying.
Yeah. No. So what he's saying is, like, okay, so you're fighting alongside the unicorn. The unicorn happens to die in this combat. Well, you decide to use its horn. Its horn is magically imbued.
That'd be fine.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, in that, I would honor, like, my idea would be to use the unicorn horn as part of the blade of a sword or a dagger.
I wouldn't do that. Is there any other part of the unicorn or Pegasus that could be magical that if you took it off them? Like, I think said the hair. Could the hair be magic?
Cloved hooves.
It's gonna be luck. I'll consider it luck from then on.
Well, I mean,
even though it's not.
Bar hair from its chin.
Well, as far as a unicorn, all of its power is in its horn.
Yeah.
As far as a Pegasus, I mean, you'll have a really great pillow.
I'll turn the wings into just
a glider.
Just don't Icarus it.
That's a different Greek mythology.
Yeah. Pegasi, unicorns, I think we're all in a kind of agreement. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
They are valiant steeds for all you holy warriors out there.
Yeah. Or unholy warriors, if you're that evil unicorn.
Thank you for staying at the Bardic Inn. If you would like to hear more, we will be uploading new content Thursdays at noon PST. On
iTunes, YouTube, SoundCloud, CastBox, and Podbean.
If you have any recommendations on future content, you can leave a comment on these various platforms, or you can contact us on Twitter at The Bardic Inn, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Bardic Inn.
We're your local bards,
Daniel,
Andrew,
Dev,
and Jake.
Be inspired.